Thanks everyone for coming. I'm Carrie Deans. I'm a second year doctoral student, Texas A&M's entomology department. And today I'm going to talk a little bit about the work I've done over the last year in quantifying macronutrient content in cotton tissue across genotypes and environment to sort of get an idea of what cotton has to offer as a resource to herbivores. So in the never-ending quest to understand pest outbreaks, in agricultural systems, it's important to try and understand a lot of the environmental variability that exists, especially those things that affect insect movement and distribution, as well as performance. And a huge part of this environmental variability is resource quality. For insect herbivores, this really pares down to plant nutrient content as well as any secondary metabolites that exist in the plant. And plants are pretty unique in that they aren't very homeostatic, so they tend to vary a lot in nutrient content, something that's very frustrating for someone who's trying to study them in a nutritional manner. But they have central vacuoles and they can store a lot of nutrients, so over space and time it's really difficult to get a sort of typical value for nutrient content within a single plant as well as between individual plants and especially among species. However, understanding this variation is important for understanding insect management, because if we know how nutrients affect insect performance and we know what kind of concentrations we have in the field and what kind of variability there is, then we're really going to be able to better predict pest outbreaks, when they will occur and where. But also for laboratory studies, it's important to make sure that artificial diet experiments we're doing in the lab and their concentrations of nutrients is really relevant to what is out in the field. And also, even if you're not doing explicitly nutritional studies in the field, if you're rearing insects on anything, whether it's greenhouse plants or artificial diets, the same is true. You have to make sure that you understand the variation that can occur and may be confounding in any studies. So typically, plant quality has been measured using total nitrogen. And this is because elemental analyses are pretty easy to do. They're pretty inexpensive. However, in a nutritional aspect, insects don't really feed on nitrogen. They feed on amino acids and proteins, biomolecules. So when they're selecting plants to feed on, that's what they're picking up on. So we really need to understand how total nitrogen measures that are common relate to protein content. You can do this using protein conversion factors. However, because plants are so variable, it's really difficult to know how specific you're going to get with a conversion factor. Especially across species, they vary quite widely. And also, you have the risk of overestimating protein content because, of course, you have other nitrogenous compounds that aren't nutritional, such as secondary metabolites, organic nitrogen, and other things that that are going to increase your nitrogen content, but they're really not accurately reflecting what insects get nutritionally. So the objective of my study was to explicitly measure digestible proteins and digestible carbohydrates to see what these plants have to offer for insects. And I did this across different varieties, also different developmental stages for some of the varieties, and then also greenhouse and field conditions. And this was done over two separate experiments. So the first experiment was a greenhouse study. The design was pretty simple. I grew conventional cotton, LA-122, Altex variety, and also BT cotton in the greenhouse. And then I basically harvested tissue and did these analyses. So 8 plants per variety were taken at each sampling time. And the plants were washed, and the insects that were on them were collected, preserved. And then the different tissue types were dissected, and they're listed here. So terminal growth refers to newly unfurled leaves. True leaves are mature, completely unfurled, and then squares and bowls. Once the tissues were dissected, they were freeze-dried and ground, and then analyzed for digestible proteins and carbs. So the Bradford method was used for proteins, and this measures all proteins except for, doesn't measure free amino acids. And or sulfuric acid method was used for all carbohydrates, so that's all non-structural carbohydrates. And these are both colorimetric assays. For the field study, this was actually a collaboration with another grad student in our lab. He had a field experiment going where he'd planted four different varieties at our research fields at A&M. So he had three varieties of hirsutum, and then he had a Barbadense Pima variety also. So two broadleafs and then one oak relief morphotype. And these plants were only harvested one time, 80 days after planting, and then they were pretty much processed the same way. They were washed, dissected, freeze-dried, and analyzed with the same assays. So for the greenhouse study, there was no difference in dry mass or average protein or average carbs between the BT and conventional, so that data was pooled together. So if we just look at the nutrient concentrations across the tissue types, we can see that for carbohydrate content, there's really no difference between the foliar tissues and the squares. However, the bowls have significantly higher carb content than the other three tissues. For protein, we see sort of a dichotomy between the foliar tissues and the fruiting bodies, with the fruiting bodies actually having the lowest protein, which is actually quite interesting given that the strong preference and high performance that many different types of insects have on fruiting bodies is always sort of assumed to be due to more nitrogen in them, but according to these data, that doesn't seem to be the case. If we look at how the nutrient concentration changes over time in these tissues, we see some interesting trends for carbohydrates. For terminal growth, there's really no difference over time, pretty much stays the same. For protein, you see a sharp decrease after day 47. For true leaves, you actually see an increase in carbohydrate content after day 47, but for protein, it's a typical decrease that we saw with the terminal growth. And for squares, we get yet a different trend for carbs. They decrease over time, and with protein, similarly, decrease over time also. Bowls, we just have one sampling period, so. For the field results, again, I didn't see any differences in dry mass between varieties, so they were pooled. If we look at the different tissue types, we can see sort of similar trends as in the greenhouse. For carbohydrates, again, bowls were significantly the highest in carb content, but for the other three tissues, unlike the greenhouse, we see some distinctions, with squares being the next highest and terminal growth being second. For protein, we don't see this dichotomy anymore between foliar tissue and fruiting bodies. Squares are pretty much the same as true leaves. However, again, bowls show the lowest protein content followed by squares and true leaves. As far as the differences in tissues across varieties, the only significant difference that I saw for varietal effect was in terminal growth. And as you can see, the Pima has seems to have significantly lower carb content only in the terminal growth, no difference in protein, and no difference in any of the other tissues. So if we sort of summarize what we see here and look at some of the other trends, in general, one of the biggest results is that if you look at the variation in nutrient content, you can see the greenhouse data are widely variable compared to the field. For protein, for instance, there's a difference of 1% in the field, and within that you get significant differences across the tissues. However, in both cases, bowls were highest as far as carbohydrate content, and they were lowest as far as protein content. And we can also see that that the nutrient content for both carbohydrates and proteins were generally higher in the greenhouse. So those plants were fertilized a couple times. And so if we want to get an idea of sort of the proportion of each of these nutrients, we can see that, by the way, this is a field data, and then this is the greenhouse data from only the last sampling period to correct for developmental stage. And if we look at just the field tissue types, we can see they're pretty tightly clustered. There's not a whole lot of variation between them. However, if we look at the greenhouse, we can see that there's this large variation in fruiting bodies. So the foliar tissues for both greenhouse and field are pretty similar. They're pretty close together. But the squares and bowls in the greenhouse have a much lower protein content in general and much higher carbohydrate content. And so the implications of knowing this kind of data, I think, falls into two considerations. So for lab, I mean, I primarily do a lot of nutritional studies in the lab. So this kind of data is very important for making sure that what I'm doing in the lab is still relevant as far as the nutrient concentrations I can test and the different treatments to make sure it's relevant to what's going on in the field and so it can be applied. But also, as I mentioned earlier, it's important to know, for instance, that if you're growing plants in the greenhouse, you can be getting quite different nutrient contents than you are in the field. And if you're really rearing insects for other studies, especially, it's good to know this because you don't want to have the nutritional aspect to be somehow confounding with whatever else you're trying to measure. For field considerations, I think that this data is really important. I mean, number one, it shows the type of variability that exists just in nutrient content. And when we think about environmental factors that affect especially pest outbreaks in the field, I don't think we can ignore the nutritional side of that. For example, if we think about the use of pesticides or BT crops, even if they're working well, you can still see variation through the years. And I think there's sort of a lot of people tend to talk about genetic resistance and those sort of things, but I think what is often not given enough consideration is just environmental variability. So I think the nutrient side of that is a huge component to that, and future work that I'm going to be doing is really going to be going in that direction and looking at how nutrition can affect, for example, susceptibility to pesticides and different things. And I would like to go ahead and thank my advisors, Greg Sword and Spencer Beamer, and also all of my lab members who helped me with a lot of the work, including the field stuff, and the Hague Lab, as well as my sponsors, the Sawyer Fellowship, Cotton Incorporated. And I'll take any questions you have.
Okay, thank you, Carrie.